When a person observes behavior all around him that seems crazy, that seems insane, how does he know that it is not he himself who is insane rather than the people around him? When other people are doing and saying things which seem wholly unreasonable, how does he know that he's not the one who is unreasonable instead of the other people? Do we have any absolute standard by which to judge such matters? Let me give a specific example of this problem. I have stated both explicitly and implicitly on a large number of occasions my belief that blacks, Negroes, Afro-Americans, whatever you want to call them, are inferior as a race to whites or European Americans in the innate abilities involved in building and maintaining a civilization. That is, I've claimed that whites are smarter and more creative than blacks. Now, in opposition to this, the U.S. government, the schools, the churches, and especially the controlled media all claim that there is no such difference in abilities between blacks and whites. A difference in skin color, yes, but that's all. There's no difference in problem-solving ability, in creativity, or in temperament between blacks and whites that gives whites an edge at building or maintaining a civilization. That's the official dogma. Any government official or any public school teacher or any minister in a mainstream church who contradicts this dogma or even fails to support it with sufficient enthusiasm will be hounded from his office or from his place of employment by the media and by his more orthodox colleagues. So, who's crazy? I or all of those folks in the government, the schools, the churches, and the media? Am I like one of those poor, confused creatures who goes around with his right hand stuck inside his shirt claiming that he's Napoleon, while everyone else says, no, he's not Napoleon, he's William Pierce and he's crazy? Or is my case more like that of an Italian teacher who, about 400 years ago, claimed that the earth revolved around the sun, while nearly everyone else in the government, the universities, and the church held the view that the sun revolved around the earth, and that to say otherwise was evidence of either craziness or impiety? How do we decide? If we go by the numbers, there certainly are a lot more crazy people who believe they're Napoleon than there are genuine Galileos. And let's face it, most people who are out of step with everyone else should be suspected of being a little crazy, shouldn't they? Now, I don't intend to compare myself with Galileo. He was a truly great creative genius, the sort of genius that our race produces perhaps once in a century. And he would be a historical celebrity even if he hadn't had a conflict with the authorities about his astronomical beliefs. But there are some things to be learned from his case which can help us answer the first question I posed today as to how we can judge who is sane. First, let's note that Galileo was not alone in his beliefs. It was just that most people who believed as he did had the sense to keep their mouths shut, at least in Italy. Galileo wasn't even the originator of the idea that got him into trouble. He had just looked at Copernicus' idea of the solar system and decided that it made a lot more sense than the Ptolemaic ideas that were politically correct. Furthermore, if Copernicus' idea about the solar system hadn't had some important theological implications, Galileo wouldn't have gotten himself into trouble for saying that he agreed with Copernicus. Galileo already had come up with a lot of new ideas which had amazed people, but they hadn't ridiculed him as being crazy or condemned him as being impious for these other ideas because these other ideas had no obvious religious significance. But the Copernican idea did have some religious significance, and that made a lot of difference, even to people who didn't take religion very seriously, but who did have a vested interest in the status quo, and that included a great many bureaucrats and academicians. A couple of differences between the cases of Galileo and the fellows who believe they're Napoleon are that no one else agrees with the would-be Napoleons, either publicly or privately, whereas many other scholars agreed privately with Galileo but were just too timid to say so publicly. A second difference is that there is no religious frenzy or religious bigotry involved when most people consider someone's claim to be Napoleon. They just laugh and decide that he's joking or he's crazy, but they don't become indignant about it. They don't have a sudden attack of piety the way they did in response to Galileo. One other thing to note about Galileo's case. The scholars who privately agreed with him accepted the Copernican idea as opposed to the Ptolemaic idea, did not do so for religious reasons. They did so because the Copernican idea made more sense. It agreed better with the facts, with the evidence. Now, back to my case. Am I crazy for asserting that blacks and whites are inherently different and unequal in their civilization-building abilities? Or is there something wrong with all of the people in the government, the schools, the churches, and the media who claim that I am either crazy or impious, that is, a hater for saying so? If I may be so presumptuous as to compare my case with that of Galileo, I will note that, as in Galileo's case, my assertions of racial differences are not original. They are not my idea. I have simply looked at the evidence, at the facts, and have based my conclusions on them. So have a great many other people, scholars and otherwise, many of whom, unfortunately, are too timid to say so publicly. One other very important similarity with the case of Galileo is that the question of racial differences or racial equality has enormous theological implications. The theology involved, of course, is the modern one which has superseded Christianity even in the churches, the theology of political correctness. And just as in Galileo's day, there are many people in the government, the schools, even the churches, who don't take this theology seriously, who don't really believe it, but who have a vested interest in maintaining it, and therefore will ridicule or condemn anyone who questions it. So again, who's crazy, I or the egalitarians? How do we judge? Let me tell you how I judge such cases. I look at the evidence, at the facts, and I look at the people involved on each side of the issue, at what I know about their characters and their intelligence, and I look at the context, social and historical. But first and foremost, I look at the evidence. I look at the historical record, or lack thereof, in the black areas of Africa. I look at the performance, or lack thereof, of blacks in the other parts of the world to which they were taken, such as America and the Caribbean. And I look at the records of criminal activity, of illegitimacy, of drug abuse. And I look at intelligence tests and at racial biometric studies, which were done back before it became politically incorrect to measure brain sizes and morphologies. And I see a consistency in all of these things. They all fit together. The lower intelligence, the thicker skulls and smaller brains, the greater criminal activity, the historical lack of performance. And I conclude that blacks almost certainly cannot build a civilization if left to themselves, and they almost certainly will destroy any civilization built by others if they are allowed to become a very large presence in it. And I compare my conclusions with the conclusions of others. I note that before the Second World War, virtually everyone, scholars, bureaucrats, churchmen, even the media, came to the same conclusion that I came to much later, that is, many years after the war. Certainly, ordinary white people were universal in their opinion about the differences in abilities between whites and blacks, although we always want to be careful about relying on public opinion. There were a few religious bigots, a few rabid egalitarians who, even back before the war, denied all of the evidence of black inequality and insisted that their lack of performance was the consequence of white oppression, and that their lower scores on intelligence tests were due only to cultural bias. But most people considered these bigots, these egalitarian zealots, to be a little crazy. Then, after the war, the Jews who controlled the media launched an all-out campaign to persuade everyone that the bigots were right after all. With the public advent of television in the 1950s, the media bosses gained an enormously powerful tool for changing public opinion. And as they began persuading substantial numbers of the most impressionable segments of the white public with television dramas portraying blacks as noble, intelligent, and unjustly treated, and also portraying whites who objected to mixing with blacks as primitive, hateful, and repulsive, the politicians, the churchmen, and the more ambitious academics saw which way the wind was blowing and began to side with the egalitarians too. The 1960s were the real turning point in this post-war propaganda campaign. That's when the Jews and the media, working closely with the Jews and the universities, managed to turn American society upside down. They encouraged drugs, permissiveness, hedonism, and youthful rebellion. They ridiculed every traditional belief and standard. The Vietnam War, or rather the government's vacillating and pusillanimous conduct of that war, was a great help to them. Organizations such as Students for a Democratic Society and the Youth International Party and 100 others, nearly all led by Jews, marched in the streets with Viet Cong flags, burned American flags, occupied and trashed university administrative offices, burned campus ROTC buildings, bombed U.S. military installations, encouraged draft-age young men to burn their draft cards, and generally raised hell, all with the approval of the mass media. All of this was in the middle of a war in which 58,000 young Americans were being killed, and the U.S. government did nothing to stop the massive treason that was going on in this country. The consequence of this was to shake the confidence of nearly everyone. Everything that people had believed was called into question. It was much easier then to change their beliefs. I don't want to try to recount the whole history of that period of artificial turmoil and change in American society. The point is that public opinion can be manipulated, and public opinion is not a reliable indicator of what's true and what isn't. That was the case in Galileo's day, and it's also the case today.